we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatments of animals.
The less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to Animal Voices, Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM, Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. Today is Friday, February 17th, 2017. I'm your host, Elise Jacobson, and I'm joined here in the studio today by my guest co-host, Mandy Lewis.
Hello.
And our control room operator, Allison Cole.
Hi there.
Welcome, everyone. So anyone who's ever lived with a dog, a cat, or any other animal knows just how special they are. They're our friends, our companions, valued members of our families. This Monday, February 20th, is National Love Your Companion Animal Day. So today's show is focused on the special non-humans who share our homes and hearts. Our feature interview is with Sarah from CARE, Companion Animal Advocacy and Rescue Effort, a Vancouver-based nonprofit dedicated to humane education, rescue, and adoption, specifically of dogs. She'll be speaking to us on the work CARE Rescue does and how each of us can help reduce overpopulation and improve the welfare of dogs. That's coming up in just over half an hour, so stay tuned. And we have another interview coming up in about 10 minutes with Marissa Smith, Julia Jomi, and Lily Vichorek, all just 13 years old. These young animal advocates from Victoria have taken up the cause of trying to ban trophy hunting of grizzly bears in BC. Their efforts have caught the attention of local news media and have inspired animal advocates of all ages in this province, so we're looking forward to hearing from them. But first, in keeping with the companion animal theme today, I was hoping we could talk a little bit about individual animals who we here at Animal Voices have known and loved throughout our lives. And Allison, you were saying you had a story to share about an animal you knew.
Yeah, well, companion animals we're talking about today. And I think I'd mentioned, like, I've talked about our quote unquote pet chicken Willie quite a few times on the show. So won't talk about her today. And then, of course, I grew up with three dogs who we all love dearly. There was Bonita, our first dog, and then Penny One, and then Penny Two. They both came named Penny. They were all rescued. Bonita was named by my mom because Bonita means beautiful in Spanish.
Right.
But the pennies came already named. So this is a story that I wanted to tell just about the beauty of companion animals and animals in general. And we were talking about interspecies relationships on the show, I think last week or a few weeks ago. And here's a perfect example of that. So Penny, this is about Penny too. She just loved squeaky toys. Like, that was like her reason for living, basically, you could say. And of course, we were always happy to oblige her, right? So she was living with my parents when I was here, already living in Vancouver. And then my sister was living with them too for some time until she moved out as well. And so whenever I'd go back home, I'd always have a new squeaky toy for her as a treat, right? And she would just go crazy. But anyways, I could tell probably lots of stories about squeaky toys, but this story is about some live squeaky toys that she got to know. So some lady, I guess, gave my mom some baby chickens, because my mom loves chickens, and she's always loved raising chicks from young. And I don't know why this woman had just baby chicks to give away, but we come from a small town, right? So such things do happen. But she gave her two chicks. I think I named them. What were their names? Oh, my sister was probably listening to this going, Allison, remember the names. Anyways, that wasn't part of the story. But the story is that So suddenly into Penny's life came these live squeaky toys.
Wow.
Like, cheep, 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 cheep. Right. But to Penny, they're like live, fluffy, squeaky toys. And she just couldn't wrap her head around that. Like, she knew, like, they're alive, they're real. Right. She was totally fascinated by them. And as I said, my sister was living there at the time, and she took tons of pictures of Penny with the chicks, like the very first week. I remember they were just a couple days old, just like these miniature little fluff balls, as you know what chicks look like.
Yeah.
And Penny was a little fluff ball herself. She was a really cute little sweet looking dog. And this is what I think, is that like she was controlling herself so much with these little squeaky toys, knowing that they were alive little individual creatures who she had to respect and love. She loved them. She was infatuated with them. We have so many photos of her just like staring intently down from the couch of the box where the chicks were living for their first little while, and like just like tiny, right? They didn't do much and just squeaked around, and her tongue hanging out, like looking at them, just like staring intently. And my sister said she just wouldn't move. Like, she would get up every morning and run to the box and look, just watch all day. Just aww, watch all day. Yeah, babies. It's really sweet, right? But okay, so here's the story. This is the actual story I wanted to tell. So she grew up with them, right? So you know when chickens start getting to be a bit older, like 5 weeks old, they start looking like little chickens, right? They lose their fluff and they start to get feathers. And so my parents had moved them outside and built like a proper area for them in the backyard. And so they were, and then they had this huge yard that they could be let out in to, you know, just to peck and scratch and take dust baths and do things that chickens do. And it was all fenced by a huge fence that my dad had built. But apparently for some reason, there was like a hole in, underneath part of the fence where if one was small enough, one could get through the hole and out of the fence. And apparently, one day, one of the chicks noticed this hole, and Penny would be out there with them. Actually, we have pictures of them just like having fun in the backyard together. Penny would just be out hanging out with them when they were scratching in the dirt with her little coat on. And my sister observed this, and she said one day Penny noticed that one of the chicks had noticed the hole and was running towards it to get out, I guess. Penny thought, oh my goodness, she's going to get out. That's what Penny thought. She said, oh my goodness. And yeah. So, but this is what happened, is Penny saw the chick darting for the hole, and Penny raced ahead of her and went and put her butt in the hole, basically turned around so she could fill the hole so the chick couldn't get out, basically protecting her chicks. Like, I think she felt very maternal over them, or perhaps, or just like as a parental figure, like she knew she had to take care of the chicks. So, I mean, many, many other experiences there. And I wasn't there for any of it, but I saw the pictures and heard the stories. But just a beautiful thing. And
that's adorable.
And another way to express, like, interspecies relationships that actually intersect with our relationships with companion animals as well.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. That's the kind of stuff we watch YouTube videos about, right? Dogs and chickens being friends. What about you, Mandy? Did you grow up with companion animals?
Yeah. I come from a Greek background, so I spent a lot of summers adopting animals for the summer, essentially, you know what I mean? And then my parents would just say, yeah, they're going to Yayan Papu's house, grandma and grandma's house. And then, sure enough, we'd come back the next summer and they wouldn't be there or whatever.
Oh, no.
But I do remember, like, very often that was sort of my opening to taking care of a species that is not my own from a young child, you know what I mean?
Right.
And so, yeah, there was a lot of animals that came and went. And I always thought that I was saving them, you know, like there's just so many cats and dogs, and I had a special epiphany for cats, which you wouldn't be able to tell now. I have two dogs. I'm a dog wolf fanatic.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I had a special affinity for cats, and I would save them and try to fix them and come back the next summer to not see them there often enough. But yeah, those kinds of things sort of stick with me.
Did you ever find out what happened to them?
One time I went to like a great grandfather's house, and like the tradition is to cut a chicken's head when you show up there. This
right.
is very koryatiko in Greek, what you would call like out in the bush kind of stuff, culture. But I remember seeing this as like a 4-year-old. I went there and I saw them cut the chicken and everybody's like so proud. They're like, this is for you. And I was just like, this is traumatic.
Oh, no.
And so then we actually left the farm with a bunny rabbit and a cat, I believe, in like a box. And we were getting on the train. Like, and they just, you know, I just remember thinking, like, if I can just save these these two right. in a box, take it back to Athens, where they inevitably got run over, I'm sure. But,
oh,
yeah.
Gosh, oh, that's a sad story.
Yeah, but it's good, though. Like, it got me to the level where, like, last summer, I don't know if you listened to last week, but I was trying to save this horse, essentially. There's a lot of, like, horse carriage shenanigans going on there where they just don't take care of the horses because it's all about money.
Yeah.
And the situation there is very dire. So, so there was a lot of like abuse going on. And a girlfriend and I took pictures of a horse that was being, that was hemorrhaging. And so we sent it to like PETA, which I know is up and down on terms of their ethics. But they ended up helping out and we like filed out police reports and went to mayor's office and stuff like that.
Wow.
And,
yeah. And so there's early experiences gave you some compassion for
animals, so every
right?
summer I go there, I try and save another life.
Oh, that's great.
And I remembered the chicks' names, Harmonia and Billy.
Oh, nice.
I named them. I should remember.
That's great. Cool. Well, we have to move on now. Mandy, you have some news for us.
I do have some news. So, right off the hop here, rescuers tried to save dozens of whales after mass stranding on a New Zealand beach, thought to be the largest stranding in decades. Department of Conservation discovered 416 pilot whales that had breached themselves overnight at Farewell Spit in Golden Bay at the top of the South Island, with more than 70% dying by the time dawn broke last Friday. Staffers say dozens of volunteers were on hand trying to save the remaining 100 whales on Friday. As the morning wore on, an urgent plea was issued for locals to drop work and school commitments and head to the remote beach to save the whales, bringing towels, buckets, sheets to cool, calm, and wet them down.
Wow.
And so this happened last Friday. Yeah. That really got me because I woke up that morning thinking, like, are they all leaving us?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, are they all leaving us?
Yeah. It's pretty scary.
It's very scary. So it's something we need to be a little bit more aware of, obviously. Yeah. Whole families of rays are being killed for a contest in Chesapeake Bay near Washington, USA. Every year, groups of cow ray swim up from Florida to Chesapeake Bay to give birth. They are met with hunters armed with bows and arrows. They shoot the rays in a contest they call quote-unquote Battle of the Rays. Those who don't die instantly are clubbed in the head. Stuart Chaffetz, an investigator for Shark, called Showing Animals Respect and Kindness, witnessed this year's contest and said, as they were dying, they gave birth as a last chance to get their babies out who were killed themselves.
That's horrifying.
I don't know how this is still going on.
Yeah.
Like, for fun?
I don't know. People don't eat rays, do they?
They don't eat them. They just throw them back. It's a contest.
Wow.
It's like a game.
Wow, yeah, that's barbaric. It's I feel like it's definitely time to leave traditions like that in the dust, you know?
All right, so some well-known actors showed their support at a Angeles Pig Savement Movement on Friday or February 14th. Narrator of the Earthlings documentary Joaquin Phoenix and the film creator Sean Munson came to pay witness to the 2 truckloads of dehydrated and petrified pigs, along with 100 other protesters who, once the truck stopped, came flooding towards the pigs with water bottles and shaken words of support and calmness.
That's amazing.
Yeah, have you guys ever been, like, did you see the video?
No. Yeah, I did see, I posted that video, but I was actually in attendance at the very first pig vigil that they had in the summer LA, and Sean Munson was there too. I did an interview with him aired on Animal Voices, and it's on our YouTube page too, if you want to check that out. But that day they knew we were coming, and there had been activists there. We got there super, super early in the morning, and but they came. Apparently, they got there even before, and they didn't come at all. There were no slaughter trucks with pigs in them during We were there for about 5 hours, and not one truck. So, I mean, it must have disrupted their business. But they can't do that all the time. And finally, a couple trucks came, as you said, this week, and definitely captured on camera. And those images are very, very powerful of those individual pigs that I saw in those photos.
Yeah. That's part of the SAVE movement, right? That really seems to be picking up around the world.
Yeah, and if listeners want to learn more about the SAVE movement, go on to our website, animalvoices.org. We've done several interviews, primarily with Anita Crines, who is being charged with mischief for feeding water to thirsty pigs two summers ago.
That's crazy. I know.
Well,
I think it's I think we have to move on actually to our our lovely interview, which Mandy will also be taking care of for us. Today we're speaking with Marissa Smith, Julia Jomi, and Lily Vichorek, who are all just 13 years old. They're from Victoria, BC, and they've taken up the cause of trying to ban trophy hunting of grizzly bears. So welcome, girls, to Animal Voices.
Thanks very much for having us.
Hi, ladies. It's Mandy here. So if we can just start off here, can you tell us some basic information about what trophy hunting is and who is trophy hunting, the history and the impact trophy hunting has right now on our animals and our ecosystem in BC?
So trophy hunting, we think, is a barbaric and cruel practice where people go out into the wild and they shoot a bear and then they cut off the head and sometimes the paws. And then they leave the body in the woods to just decompose, and they take their prizes back and they get them stuffed.
Wow. Do you know why they're doing this? Do you guys know why they're cutting off the paws? And is that just for fun, or?
Yeah, we believe that it's mostly for fun and sport,
right?
Because it serves no actual purpose to. Like, for example, with traditional hunting, they hunt to actually eat the animal. Well, here it is literally just a trophy.
Wow. And how were you made aware of trophy hunting? What was your reaction to that? Like, how did you go from seeing an injustice to doing something about it?
Well, I was made aware of it when I joined the environmental club here at school, and one thing led to another, and I found out about trophy hunting. And my initial reaction was I was just so shocked and outraged.
Right. Okay. And you've obviously dedicated yourselves a lot to research and petitioning, which is fantastic. You found allies with a local advocacy group called Justice for BC Grizzlies. Can you tell us the importance of speaking and standing up when seemingly not many others are, particularly leaders?
We believe that it's very important to stand up for what you believe in, and with this cause, it's very, very wrong to do to the environment and to the ecosystem, and really standing up for what you believe in is the only way to make change.
Mm-hmm. And how has joining the Justice for BC Grizzlies helped your personal goals?
Well, we're not part of their, association,
okay,
but we are partnering just for this issue, so we are technically not part of Justice for Grizzly,
okay,
but it has been very helpful because organizing our thoughts and getting into, taking it a step further, really.
Absolutely, and allying up, obviously. Okay, so what were your initial expectations from the Liberal government or local politicians such as Christy Clark when you first demanded that the ban, and what were you expecting to see?
Well, we are willing to work with everyone and anyone who wants to help our cause.
Mm-hmm. And when did you ladies first start this petition? Like, when did you first start becoming very public about it?
We'd say last year, so
yeah,
in grade 7.
Okay, so a year. About a year you girls have been doing this.
Yes.
Okay. And given that 91% of British Columbians disagree with trophy hunting, why do you think it still has continued to this day?
Well, trophy hunting hasn't really been publicized until now.
Mm-hmm.
And because there's such a big disagree rate, we really feel that taking this action will abolish the act of trophy hunting once and for all.
Yeah, as like awareness, essentially, right? Okay. And what do your friends or sort of community think about your activism? Does it feel like you are part of a larger movement? And has this activism exposed you to other local environmental issues that you feel strongly about?
Well, we've got a lot of positive feedback from our friends and community. And we going back to what you said before about how many British Columbians disagree with trophy hunting, I think, like, becoming public and so forth, because so many people disagree with it, they're willing to support us a lot in our community.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely feels like we're part of a larger movement because there are plenty of other people doing work just like it, mm-hmm. like what we're doing. And our activism has us, well, it hasn't exposed us to other environmental issues. We'd say it's the other way around, that looking into other environmental issues has exposed us to this.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that you're becoming more aware of the environment?
Definitely. Because bears especially are such a large part of the ecosystem,
mm-hmm.
it makes you realize how much everyone is connected to each other through nature.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What do you girls think is the most effective course of action to getting a trophy ban implemented or getting politicians to listen and take immediate action?
Oh, we definitely think that it's public awareness, because when you educate the people about what's going on in our community or in our province, really, they sort of understand what the problem is, and then we get more people behind us, and that's when you really get the politicians to listen to you.
Mm-hmm.
You have an educated public, and you're supported by the community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Hi, girls. Elise here. Yeah, I just had a quick question for you. So you mentioned that looking into other environmental issues got you aware and interested in the grizzly trophy hunting issue. Was this something that you were learning in school, or were you looking into environmental issues on your own, or how did that come about?
It kind of started when we joined the environmental club. We first worked with trying to ban shark finning.
Cool.
And then we were brought on the topic of trophy hunting.
Yeah, the club has expanded to many different issues.
That's great. So this is a club at your school, I'm assuming?
Yeah, it's run by our teacher, Ms. McCullough.
Oh, wonderful.
Okay, another question here, ladies. I don't know if you've heard, but there was a petition going on via change.org requesting that both our national airline carriers stop allowing the transport of all trophy kills. So in other words, wolves, black bears, and grizzly bears. I used to work at WestJet, have requested as an employee myself that they ban carrying these dead animals. Have you ladies thought about applying pressure to the airlines directly for carrying these trophies?
Well, we're coordinating in conjunction with other groups.
Mm-hmm.
And our work complements what other people are doing.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't really thought about it, really. We've mostly been thinking about the issue of actually trophy hunting in a BC rather than trophies coming from abroad.
Mm. Yeah, understandable. Yeah, go ahead, Love.
Okay. Yeah, I was just wondering also, what are some of the specific strategies that you girls have used so far to get this ban going? Have you been petitioning or picketing or writing letters? Like, can you tell us more about the actual activism that you've been doing on this issue?
Well, we wrote a letter to Christy Clark, and so we've been writing letters, but we've mainly trying to be getting publicity through the media that to really get our action going. And so we met with Rob Fleming, who was the Swang Lake MLA, and he supported us. And we were planning on meeting with other parties as well, because we are not affiliated with any particular party.
Mm-hmm.
And, so definitely getting through the media has been a really big step, and we are continuing to take that path.
That's amazing. I heard somewhere that you ladies are going to be speaking to the Premier, Christy Clark, on behalf of these grizzlies. Is that going on?
That would be welcome, but nothing is said at the moment. But that is our goal.
Yeah, that's your goal.
With Christy Clark.
Hi there. This is Allison. I have a question for you. I just think you girls are very inspiring, and I see a bit of myself in you three, because I also was part of. I actually used to lead the environmental group at my high school many, many years ago, over 20 years ago. And my activism has continued throughout my life until now, where I'm hosting a weekly show here on animal advocacy issues that the whole world can listen to. So I really hope that you're, I just feel like you girls are starting, you're so young, and you're so, you're just very inspiring because you're such young activists. And I see just a lot of positivity in that for what can come into the future, because children are our future. So my question for you is, how do you feel your role is important as a young activist to speak up and get the message out for a call for a ban on trophy hunting? Because this is an issue that's we've been aware of it for quite some time, but it hasn't stopped yet. And as Mandy had mentioned, over 90% of British Columbians don't support the trophy hunt. How do you see your role in being important as young people to get this issue noticed in British Columbia?
Because we're young people, we really see the world as what we're going to grow up in. And so any change we can really make to better the place that we're going to live in and others that will come after us will live in as well, the more we can make it better and educate the people about the problems and what we can do to fix and make the world really a better place for everyone.
That's so great. That's amazing. Ladies, just to go back to like your community and your friends, like have you found that you've actually started like your own movement in a way, like in your own school and like your friends and stuff like that? Like, are you feeling like you're sharing some wisdom?
Yes, definitely. The awareness is spreading. And that's what we really see the media as an important step in this, to get to a larger amount of people faster so this movement can really take off.
Absolutely. And can you
just one more thing, please? Val Murray, Justice for BC Grizzlies. Anyone who's listening can go to justiceforbcgrizzlies.com, can join our Thunderclap campaign to end the grizzly hunt, and also can take the pledge to end the grizzly hunt at justiceforbcgrizzlies.com. Aren't these girls amazing?
Yeah, unbelievable. Absolutely. I think we should add that Thunderclap to the Animal Voices website.
Yes.
Or the Facebook
page. Wonderful. Please do.
Yeah. Yeah, let's do that. Absolutely. Ladies, one last big question here. And this is really important for everybody who's listening. What can people do right now, the people who are listening here in British Columbia, what can they do to help stop the trophy hunting and help the grizzly population? What are the resources and avenues that you would get people engaged in, or what can they just do just right now?
Well, you can raise awareness. So just educate your friends, any family friends. If they don't know about trophy hunting, you can tell them and just educate them. You can also support Justice for BC Grizzlies and other organizations. Mm-hmm. And
you can also support ecotourism in BC.
Ecotourism, yeah.
Can you tell us what that means?
The more you get informed, the more you can realize what's going on in this issue, and especially educate yourself on both sides of the issue so you can truly understand the issue, and that's how you can make a change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great advice. Can you tell our listeners what ecotourism is?
Well, from experience, you're taken on, I went on a boat to get to the mainland.
Well, Julia took a grizzly bear watching tour, which is part of ecotourism.
Oh, right. Great. Yeah. Great. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you ladies learned a lot from that, obviously.
Yeah, that was actually Julia that is gone, so she'd like to tell you a little bit more about what happened.
Yeah, tell us.
So we were taken to the mainland, and there were some locals who, they took us to a spot where there were more likely to be grizzly bears. We were taken up what they called a tower, which was just a raised building where you could take pictures and videos from above. And we would usually stay there for about 2 or 3 hours. And the bears just kind of showed up, and they went about their day. As long as we didn't bother them, they just
did bear things.
Yeah, that's amazing. I guess
natural bear things.
Right, seeing them close up gives you more compassion for them, right? That's excellent.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's a big difference from actual trophy hunting. For example, with ecotourism, you get to watch these bears time and time again. And you get to see them in their live habitats. While with trophy hunting, it's an hour, maybe less, of hiking through the woods, and then the beauty is gone in a single gunshot.
Yeah. Absolutely. Oh my gosh, ladies, thank you so much for coming on and letting us interview you, all three of you. Everything that you said today was super important, and it's super, super inspirational, not just for young advocates, but for older advocates and people of all ages and people of our province and all that stuff. So we're definitely going to put the Thunderclap information on either our website or the Facebook page, Animal Voices.
Yeah, animalvoices.org.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. And yeah, thank you so much. Ladies, thank you so, so very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
You're listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. And we have some events coming up.
So, new volunteers meeting for Meatless Meetup, Saturday, February 18th, between 1 and 3 p.m. at Edible Flowers. That's located at 2280 West Broadway, Vancouver. This is an opportunity to help Meatless Meetup group to expand and grow. There are a variety of rules for new volunteers, including cash collection, greeting, promotion of the group at info booths and online, graphic design, and volunteer coordination. Edible Flowers has also generously offered folks attending the meeting 30% off all orders. Please register online if you are passionate about promoting the plant-based diet and genuinely have time to volunteer. Nutrition tour for our non-vegans in Yale Town, Tuesday, February 21st at Choices Market, located at 1202 Richard Street, Vancouver. This is a great opportunity for vegans to attend as well, but the information is geared towards those wanting to transition to a more vegan diet and learn about the foods available and the nutritional considerations involved. This is a fun, informative, and free vegan nutritional tour hosted by our registered holistic nutritionalist, Elizabeth Wally. Snack Luck and Film Night at Vancouver Co-Housing on Friday, February 24th between 7:15 p.m. and 10:15 p.m. at 1733 East 33rd Avenue. Vancouver Co-Housing is an international co-housing community. Bring some vegan snacks to share and join in on an eye-opening environmental film and discussion. They will be showing Cowspiracy, the Sustainability Secret. A donation of $5 is required for the community screening license.
That's a super important film to watch, and I've invited a friend and his three kids to go. I really hope he attends, if you're listening.
Yeah.
So I think every human being should see that show. So please, if you've seen it, please bring someone to this. And as of yesterday, we had 9 spots left for this event.
Wow. Amazing. Yeah, that's very compelling.
And then last but not least, $5 all-you-can-eat lunch at Loopy Cafe. This Saturday, February 25th is unfortunately full, but there will be a next one on Sunday, March 19th, 11:30 to 1:30 p.m., located at 7743 Champlain Crescent, Vancouver. Loopy Cafe is a zero-waste community endeavor. The food is sourced from grocery stores, produce markets, and farms, utilizing items which would otherwise be thrown out, often because they are deemed not presentable due to age, abnormal shape, or simply because of a fast inventory turnover. Bring $5, an appetite, and some conversation.
And as you mentioned, these events, we're having them, I think, about once a month. They're selling out quickly. It's only $5. Everyone wants to go, right?
Yeah.
And Elise has to go. It's in your hood.
That's
you got to
right.
go check
it's
it out.
To where I live.
Yeah. So I think these events are obviously very popular because I'm seeing the comments and everyone's saying what a great event it was. So sign up now for that March one if you want to get in at meetup.com/meatlessmeetup.
What an amazing idea, Zero Waste Cafe.
Isn't
I think
that
that's
cool?
So
yeah.
great. Yeah,
I love the business model, and it's only $5 too for the. I don't know how much it costs if you just go there on your own, but we always tend to get a deal for our Meatless Meetup events.
Cool. Yeah, that's great. Yep. So if you have an animal-related event that you'd like to share on, or that you'd like us to share on Animal Voices, send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. So our feature interview today is with Sarah Gardner of CARE, Companion Animal Advocacy and Rescue Effort, a registered nonprofit dedicated to humane education and prevention of pet overpopulation, headquartered right here in Vancouver. Established in 2014, CARE has worked tirelessly to rescue and rehome dogs of all sizes and ages, most of them scheduled to be put down in shelters or destroyed in rural communities in Canada. Hello, Sarah, and welcome to Animal Voices.
Hi, thank you for having me.
For sure. Thank you for being here. Can you tell us about how CARE got started in 2014? What's the story there?
Sure. So we there's three of us, three directors, and the three of us had all volunteered for different organizations in the past. We've all had a passion for animals for our entire lives. And I guess we just had a vision, and we decided to start our own rescue. We had the resources, and we had the connections, so we started up CARE.
Great. Yeah, very cool. So how many dogs do you estimate you help rehome each year, and how many are currently available for adoption or fostering?
Because we're in two provinces, we are a high-volume rescue just because of the number of dogs that there are in Manitoba up north. So I'd say we probably rehome over 400 dogs per year.
Wow.
And right now in our BC rescue, we have 28 dogs for adoption, and in Manitoba there's about 25.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty busy.
Yeah, for sure. You have your hands full. So what sort of process is involved in rescuing and rehoming these dogs, and how do you usually find out about those in need?
So Facebook is obviously a great tool for finding out about animals in need. There's so many people who cross-post, and that's how we get requests for a lot of the dogs. There's a lot of groups where people will post dogs that are in need. So in Manitoba, our dogs come from the First Nations communities.
Mm-hmm.
We have many people that live out there, local people who are amazing and take in stray dogs and contact us to bring the dogs into rescue, and they're just incredible to work with. Out here, we bring the dogs from Manitoba because of the overpopulation there. We've worked with numerous rescues, Northwest Territories, SPCA. We work with people in California who send us shelter dogs, local surrenders, you know, dogs with behaviors that people can't manage anymore, and we feel that the dog can safely be rehomed, then we'll take those dogs on as well and provide them the training that they need and find them an appropriate home, because the home that they might be in might not be the most suitable, but they're still not, you know, they're not a bad dog. They just need the right environment.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the majority of our animals come from, and that's how we find out about them is people contacting us and usually social media.
Yeah, that's amazing. So, so you mentioned that you travel to First Nations communities and you've traveled to California. How far has the organization traveled to rescue some of these dogs?
The girls in Manitoba, they'll go on rescue missions and they'll head up anywhere, you know, from 2 hours away to 6 hours away, depending on the ability to get to the actual community. Here, we've gone to California before, Mexico. It just depends on, you know, at the time what the need is and if we're able to make a trip. Usually, we just pay for transport and have the animals come to us because it's hard to take time off of work and go and do these rescue missions. But there are people affiliated with our organization that do that for us.
Great. So when did your Winnipeg branch open? And I'm wondering if there are different challenges to rescuing dogs in the prairies or if it's kind of similar to here.
Totally. The dogs that come in Manitoba are usually quite ill, coming from the remote communities. They've been living on their own. You know, we get anything from young puppies with parvovirus, really bad mange, to older adults who come in with, you know, widespread cancer, amputations that are needed because of an old injury that hasn't been treated. So Manitoba's it's a little bit different than out here. Usually when they're sent to us, they've already been stabilized medically because they have to be cleared to fly.
Mm.
And our Manitoba branch started around September 2014.
Mm.
Our Manitoba coordinator, Lindsay, contacted me about a dog that she wanted to get into rescue, and she was having a hard time finding rescue because he was a black dog. He was an adult mastiff mix.
Mm-hmm.
So we took him, and then she and I connected, and she's become our Manitoba coordinator ever since. So it worked out well.
Great.
Yeah,
it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. So what would you say are the main causes of companion animal overpopulation in Canada?
Well, it depends on where it is. You know, up north, the people just don't have the resources to deal with pet overpopulation. So there are groups that go in and hold clinics, spay and neuter clinics. Usually the main reason for overpopulation is animals that just keep breeding.
Mm-hmm.
You have backyard breeders who just keep breeding and breeding, and they don't, you know, follow up if the animals have been fixed. And anybody can adopt or anybody can buy the animal, and then they can continue breeding it.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know that puppies and kittens can have multiple litters per year, and then those animals will breed, and it's just a big snowball effect.
Mm-hmm.
In California, Mexico, again, you have a lot of street dogs. The shelters are packed. They euthanize countless animals per day. So it's, again, just a big problem of pet overpopulation due to not being spayed and neutered.
Right. Yeah, I'm wondering, too. I mean, it seems like some of these things you have to deal with the dogs being really sick and everything, that costs a lot of money to treat. Where do you all get the funding for this? Is it just from donations or?
Yeah, when we started up, you know, we didn't obviously have any money, so we put in a lot of our own money because it was a passion of ours, and that's the only way that we could get started. Now, with adoption fees, we're able to pay for our vetting. We do fundraisers. We get donations. People are very generous. We have people who start little donation drives for us. We're really fortunate to work with some amazing volunteers and daycares like Uptown Dog. They do a fundraiser for us every month.
Wow.
Yeah, we're really lucky with the volunteers and the people that we have helping. But it is expensive. Our vet bills are anywhere from $10,000 to $15,000 a month.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, yeah, that's a lot. Well, that's incentive for anyone listening. Make sure you toss a tip their way because you need it. So what are some things that you wish more people knew before adopting a dog?
I would say that it's a lifetime commitment. And no dog is ever perfect, whether you get it from a breeder or you get it from a rescue. You are always prone to having challenges, whether it be separation anxiety, aggression of some sort, so many behaviors that can come up later on in life. And we just ask people to ask yourself, you know, if I take on the responsibility of adopting an animal, am I up for the challenges that might come up later on? And, you know, how much work and time and effort am I willing to put into this animal to give it a stable home?
Yeah, yeah, those are great points. Just on a personal note, I was remembering that when I was growing up, when I was really little, my family had a dog that my parents had bought from a breeder. And then later on, when I was a teenager, we adopted one from a shelter. And, obviously, I was a kid. I loved them both very much. And I have great memories of both of them. But if anything, the rescue dog had fewer problems than the purebred dog, just behaviorally, physically, everything.
Yeah,
so
it all depends. I've had multiple rescue dogs throughout my life. And, back when I was younger, we did have dogs from breeders, too. And it was dependent on the personality of the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to have the proper tools to manage any behaviors that come about. And you have to keep your dog safe, and you have to keep everybody else safe. And that's the main thing, is to just be a responsible pet owner and understand that even if your dog isn't perfect, it's okay to take your dog outside with a muzzle on. That's fine. You know, you're keeping your dog safe and everybody else, and your dog still has a great life because, you know, he's able to go everywhere and do everything, but just with a tool that's helping.
Right.
Sarah, it's Allison here. I have a question for you.
Sure.
What would you say to people who say that they want a specific breed of dog, so therefore they need to go out and purchase this dog from a breeder rather than getting a rescue dog from a shelter?
I would say to check rescues and shelters first, because surprisingly we do get a lot of single breed dogs. I can't say that they're purebred unless they come with papers, but we do get a lot of single-breed dogs, and there are a lot of breed-specific rescues. So if you're looking, for example, for a border collie or a pit bull or a lab, there's rescues that only rescue those breeds.
Mm-hmm.
So they are out there. So I would suggest checking first, and hopefully you'll find something. Petfinder.com is a really great website.
That's so funny.
Yeah, you can put in whatever breed you prefer, and they'll show you, within the radius that you're willing to travel, any dogs that come up fitting that profile.
That's amazing. Can I just quickly say, I actually used that Petfinder. I bought like a young dumb lady. I bought my English Mastiff 8 years ago, and then I rescued an English Bulldog on Pet Finder because I said, listen, I want to rescue another dog, but I don't want to buy another dog. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, they had a Bulldog. They had, because I wanted them to match their behavior, essentially their level, energy level. And I said, you know, ranging from this dog to that dog. And sure enough, they had a Bulldog. Cool. They have Bulldogs there. Yeah, she had tons of problems, obviously. We spent a lot of money trying to fix her.
You just have to do a little bit of legwork sometimes, and it's amazing what you can come up with.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Absolutely. So we always encourage people too, if there's a dog that you're looking for and our rescue doesn't have it, we're happy to, you know, show them another dog that another rescue's posted, and maybe that would be a good match for them.
Great, that's good to know. Can you tell us about any of the individual dogs you currently have available for adoption at CARE, or any others who have stood out over the years?
Oh my gosh. Well, we love them all. One of my favorites that we just adopted out, she's been in rescue for quite some time because we wanted to find her the perfect home, was a little two-legged chihuahua named Rue. Oh. We got her from a shelter. She was on her last day at the shelter, and she came to us. She's just an incredible little dog with such an amazing spirit. And we had a wheelchair made for her, and she actually just got adopted about 3 weeks ago.
Wow.
Yeah, so she stands out. We've had so many. We've had dogs who are missing ears and tails and legs.
Was Rue on social media? I feel like I saw a video of that. Yeah, Rue, the two-legged chihuahua.
And
that's Rue.
Like a kangaroo. Yeah,
I saw that.
Yeah, yeah, she was a fan favorite for sure. We had Hank, who's a huge mastiff pity mix, well over 100 pounds, but afraid of his own shadow.
Oh, sure. Typical mastiff.
Yeah, and he came from a hoarding situation. So he's got a great home now. We've had a few dogs from hoarding situations that when they came here, they wouldn't even look at you. You couldn't get them out of their crate. Yeah. One dog got under our deck, and he was under there for 24 hours before we could take apart the deck and get him out. He was very, like, terrified of everything. He crawled under the car seat in someone's vehicle, and we had to call them to come and remove the seat to get him out.
Wow.
And he was about a 45-pound dog, and now he's living the life. He travels all over with his new family.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. He took some time to adjust, but he came around. Right now, we have a dog named Venus. She's a Border Collie Lab mix.
Great name.
Super, super active, but a great dog, loves everybody. We just rescued a mom and pups from Nunavut, and they made their way here. The mom is a black lab mix, and they're 6 puppies. They're about 7 weeks, so we're going to keep them probably about another week before they can go to their homes. Mm-hmm. They look like they're lab husky and maybe some Roddy or Pitty in them.
Wow.
So cute, yeah. Mm-hmm. We have Sadie, who's a black lab mix. She had sarcoptic mange. She's a handful. She's about 4 months old. Definitely needs a home that can give her exercise and the proper stimulation so she can be the best dog that she can be. Mm-hmm. Who else do we have right now? We have a couple more coming on the 20th, a husky mix from Mexico, and then we have 2 pups and an 8-month-old pup and a adult named Grover, a boxer mix. They're all coming from Manitoba on the 20th. Grover's got that cute little kind of underbite face.
Oh.
We have Banksy right now. He's a shepherd mix. He's about 5 months old. Unfortunately, he was returned. His family tried really hard with him, but he just was a little bit too much for the kids. But he's, you know, doing great with an older adult in the home.
That's good.
So he's looking for a home that is, you know, older kids, any maybe over the age of 10.
Mm.
I think I'm forgetting a few. I have to look at my sheet. But if people go on Facebook, all of our dogs are posted. And if we don't have something that, you know, you're looking for right now, chances are we'll get it. Mm-hmm. Oh, we have a dashhound coming, a 3-year-old dashhound. His owner is terminally ill. So he's coming into rescue. And then a couple more smalls right now, but they're going on adoption trials. So, yeah.
Way to go.
Wow, that's
crazy.
Lot.
I know.
Yeah.
I can't remember what I ate for breakfast, but we can remember most of the dogs.
Right, right. Yeah, for sure. Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So, you mentioned that some of these come from, like, hoarding situations and other difficult circumstances. How does that work when like, do you all go yourselves to rescue the dogs, or do you have people who help you?
Yeah, it's usually people who help us. A lot of the hoarding cases, usually those dogs, they'll be taken to shelters first, and then they'll come to
right.
us.
Okay.
Because if it's an animal cruelty case, then it has to go through the proper channels.
Right.
Yeah. But then we catch wind of it, and that's when we'll be asked to take some of the dogs once they're once the investigation is complete, and they can send them out to rescues. Normally, well, I shouldn't say normally, but oftentimes from hoarding situations, the dogs don't have a lot of human contact,
mm-hmm.
so they're not highly adoptable, so they do need some rehabilitation before they can be adopted out.
Right.
And sometimes you get individual rescuers who have been trying to do a good thing, and it just spirals out of control, and it ends up being a hoarding situation
yeah.
where they try to do a good thing, and they get into debt because of the vet bills, and it just goes haywire, and
yeah.
you have all these dogs all of a sudden, and you're overwhelmed.
Hey, it's Mandy. Just a quick question. Do you guys have vets that ever contribute or donate their time and expertise?
Yeah, we have vets. They give us a rescue rate, which is very helpful.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be able to do a lot of the procedures that we do if we didn't have a rescue rate.
Okay.
We work with Cypress Animal Hospital in Metrotown in Vancouver,
mm-hmm.
And they've been fantastic. Always super helpful, willing to take our dogs on an emergency basis if we need it. And then in Manitoba, we work with quite a few different vets as well.
Okay.
Great.
Yeah.
So what are some of the ways in which our listeners can help to support your efforts?
Always adopt.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't adopt, then maybe you can foster. And
mm-hmm.
if you can't foster, then maybe you can donate or mm-hmm. cross-post, volunteer. We always need drivers. It's hard because we all work full-time, so we're really only free in the evening, so if people have the days free, that's always helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Helping to fundraise, funds are always an issue for, I think, every rescue organization. And if, you know, they have a different rescue that they want to help, then go for it. I mean, as long as people are helping the rescue community, I think that's what's the most important.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
So tell us about this bowling fundraiser event that you have coming up in a few weeks in Port Coquitlam.
Oh, so that is coming up on March 3rd. It's $30. That includes your rentals, a drink. I believe they're doing pizza and chips. Yeah, it should be fun. I think it starts at 9 p.m. It's all on our Facebook page if people are interested with the exact details. And, yeah, it should just be a fun night of bowling and, you know, hopefully being carefree and not worrying about too much.
Right.
Yeah.
Take a break.
Yeah, that's great. And those funds
will... helping the animals, so that's great.
Right.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for joining us on Animal Voices today, Sarah, and sharing your knowledge and experience on dog rescue with us.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And it's a great show that you have. So thanks again.
Oh, thank you so much. So for our listeners, if you'd like to volunteer with or donate to the work of Care Rescue or are interested in fostering or adopting a dog, visit their website at Care Rescue, that's C-A-A-R-E, rescue.com. You've been listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. Please join us here next Friday, February 24th. Next week's show will feature an interview with Beverly Buckley of Vegan for Good, the four-week social experiment for world peace. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Visit our website at animalvoices.org, where you can stream past shows or download them as podcasts. You can also see our show blog there with detailed links and subscribe to us on iTunes. Stay in touch with us on Facebook, facebook.com/animalvoicesvancouver, and on Twitter at animalvoicesyvr. We're currently looking for volunteers to produce, co-host, operate the control room, help with website maintenance and social media, and more. If you have skills and interest in any of these areas, as well as a passion for animal advocacy, please do drop us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Training will be provided.
And Elise, the last time you mentioned that, shortly after that, I heard from Mandy, and now she's here helping.
Hi,
everybody. So you see it works.
That's amazing.
Can I make a quick announcement?
Just
something that was posted on the group on Facebook that you moderate Elise Vancouver Vegan. Something that we've been waiting for a long time in Vancouver is Pan's Veggie just opened up again.
Oh, good. Yeah, somebody must ask about that like once a month. That's amazing.
Well, as the administrator, you're like, just no, it hasn't opened yet. Or please refer to previous posts.
Yeah.
So now, you were busy doing the show, but I had to open this up to look up something. I'm like, oh, that popped up. So thanks to Joanne Chang, our former co-host, for posting that.
Great.
So it was a great restaurant that used to be downtown Vancouver. And now they've finally, what they've been saying for like 2 years, they're going to move to Fraser and 19th. They're finally open.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. All vegan, Chinese, really nice people.
Yeah.
Good place to go.
Yeah, really tasty food. I'll have to hit that up soon. And and while you're over there, you can get some vegan shoes and some vegan cupcakes.
Joanne knows because she owns Nice Shoes.
That's right.
So go say hi to Joanne and Glenn.
Yeah, good
stuff. Their new baby, and buy some vegan shoes. And then next door to that, go to Fairy Cakes
and Chomp is there too, right?
They're a combined. So that's like a vegan block now.
Pretty much.
I just realized that. All at Fraser and 19th in
vegan
Vancouver.
Minimal. Yeah, yeah. Oh, man, I got to go to Pans and get some hot pots. So good. Okay, so now we'll leave you with a song. This is Peggy Lee singing He's a Tramp from the 1955 Disney classic movie Lady and the Tramp. This song is a scene in the dog pound, and you can hear the other dogs howling and doing the backing vocals. It's very amusing. So thank you for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
What a dog.
Yeah.
What a dog.
Yeah. Tell us about it, Peg.
What a dog.
Peg used to be in the Dog and Pony Follies.
He's a tramp, but they love him. Breaks a new heart every day. He's a tramp, they adore him. And I only hope he'll stay that way. He's a tramp, he's a scoundrel, he's a rounder, he's a cad. He's a tramp, but I love him. Yes, even I have got it pretty bad. You can never tell when he'll show up. He gives you plenty of trouble. I guess he's just a no-count pup. But I wish that he were double. He's a tramp, he's a rover, and there's nothing more to say. If he's a tramp, he's a good one, and I wish that I could travel his way. Wish that I could travel his way. Wish that I could travel his way.